welcome to House District 35 Candidate Forum, broadcast over KCAW Sitka and KFSK in Petersburg, and rebroadcast over KRBD in Ketchikan. This is one of a series of candidate forums you've been hearing over public radio this election season. Today we'll feature incumbent Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins and challenger Kenny Carl Skaffelstad, who are vying for the seat representing most of this listening area in the Alaska House of Representatives. I'm KCAW News Director Robert Woolsey, and I'd like to now introduce your forum moderator, Coast Alaska News Director Jacob Resnick.
Good evening, Robert. Thank you very much. This is Jacob Resnick from Douglas, Alaska, and we'll go right into it with opening statements from candidates Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins, the incumbent, and challenger Kenny Skaffelstad in Hoonah. We had a coin toss at KFSK, and Jonathan Christ Tompkins will go first.
Thanks.
Opening statement.
Yeah, thank you, Jacob. My name is Jonathan Christ Tompkins. I'm zooming in from Sitka, and I'm a proud member of the bipartisan coalition in the House of Representatives. I've been a proud member of that coalition the last 4 years, and am basically looking to be a proud member for 2 more years of that coalition. That's a really strong orientation I take to the position, to the legislature, to the House of Representatives, which is that coalition form of government is important for Alaska. It's particularly good for coastal Alaska, given how well represented coastal Alaska is in the coalition structure, on the finance committees, with other committee chairmanships, with the Speaker of the House. And I definitely want to see that continue for 2 more years. What the bipartisan coalition also stands for, and what I also stand for, is a check on Governor Dunleavy. I've been strongly opposed and concerned about the agenda he's put forward for Alaska. It's absolutely terrible for coastal Alaska, from the decimation of the ferry system to looking to shut down small rural schools. I and the coalition have sought to override the vetoes the governor has made. We've been partly successful in that regard. Things could have been a lot worse. And for the next 2 years, look to be sure to make sure that we have a robust check on the executive and make sure that Mat-Su Valley brand of Republican politics don't sort of have too much undue influence in terms of the future of the state. So that's just a couple of sort of guiding principles that I hope sort of set the table.
Thank you, Representative Christ Tompkins, and for keeping it below 2 minutes. Mr. Kenny Skaffelstad, your opening statement, 2 minutes, please.
Well, first, I want to thank Kay Kaw and Kay Fisk for providing this forum for us to share with. I am Kenny Carl Skaffelstad from Hoonah. I've traveled in various occupations around this district and beyond. Many people do know me and have met a lot of new people lately since I became a contestant in the race for the state house seat for District 35. I am a Republican. I have conservative values. Indeed, I am entering the race in pursuit of forwarding a set of conservative values, as well as a long working man's perspective. I am the former mayor of Hoonah, former council member, a civic activist and all-around rabble-rouser when it comes to general civic issues. Hoonah's very close to Juneau, and in various capacities and just in general, I spent a great deal of time in the Juneau area and very familiar with happenings there. My main message to everybody here is I'm ready to take on this position because I don't think the same minds have brought us here are capable of getting us out. Thank you.
Thank you, Kenny Scaffelstead. So we're going to go to some questions that were drawn up by KFSK, KCAW, and Coast Alaska's newsrooms. But if listeners have their own questions, they can send them to news@kcaw.org. That's news@kcaw.org. And we'll try to get some of those read on the air. We'll go to the first one. It's a general question, the budget. And we'll start with you, Representative Christ Tompkins. What do you see as the solution, the way out of Alaska's fiscal crisis? And how do you propose lawmakers address the gaps in the state budget when they come back into a session in January?
Yeah, great question. It's going to dominate the next 2 years without a doubt. I'm an unabashedly math and reality oriented person when it comes to the budget problem. There has yet to be a budget proposal put forward in Alaska that actually balances the budget, that even remotely passes the red face test, that doesn't involve some combination of downward pressure on the operating budget, new revenues, which means taxes, and restructuring the permanent fund dividend. And there just hasn't been. Even the governor's kind of scorched earth budget proposal 2 years, which basically directly led to his recall, didn't even balance the budget. And that was pretty scorched earth. It didn't even come close to balancing the budget, in fact. It relied on drawing down savings and other sort of kick the can measures. So I'm math oriented and reality oriented and very much want to realize short-term pain in order to create a long-term secure future for the state. Even if that means tough decisions, that's very much my orientation and guiding principle. And that means all of the above approach, not just pretending we can get away with one of revenues, downward operating budget pressure, and permanent fund dividend restructure.
You've got 20 seconds left. Can you talk about downward pressure? Where would you cut and what kind of taxes would you support to raise?
Yeah, I mean, the legislature's cut the operating budget by a steady, probably like 2-4% a year margin the last 5 to 6 years. A lot of that has been attributing different agencies. It's been looking at consolidation. There's a lot of sort of trimming around the edges that has occurred. And it, basically that sort of same approach of not just, you know, gashing huge programs all in one fell swoop, but sort of trimming and sort of continually reducing the budget, I think is a much more sort of intelligent and sustainable approach to budget pressure. So the budget has
been cut. We'll press you for specifics a little further. We're going to give Kenny Scaffelstead an opportunity for his 2 minutes and we'll come back on this. Mr. Scaffelstead, 2 minutes, please, on the budget. How to close the budget gap.
Yes, certainly. Certainly the largest challenge to Alaska is for us to bring this budget in perspective. Again, we're faced with, I certainly agree with Jonathan that there hasn't been a sensible or balanced approach to budgeting in the last many, many years. And while there have been some token cuts realized to certain budget items, in the last several years, I see that our cost of government per person, per population, per capita, per se, seems to have nearly doubled in about the same amount of time that we've tracked small token budget cuts. Kicking a can down the road is not a thing that we can do because we flat run out of road. There's not a road to kick this can down any further. The responsibility of a household doesn't allow to live outside of its means. If you're not meeting the budget end with the resources you have, you must resort to alternatives at a very early time, as opposed to after the fact, when we're so deep in trouble, our alternatives start to narrow. I think that we have room to cut redundancies. I think we have room to raise revenues in the form of resource development that is sometimes a painstakingly delayed process when left to government. I mostly think that government needs to do what it can to allow for commerce to generate in the entire state.
Okay, thank you very much. I want to go back to Representative Chris Tompkins and ask him specifically how he would raise revenues. We mentioned taxes specifically. How would this look like? A payroll tax, an income tax? What specifically would you support? 2 minutes, please.
Yeah, I have voted for an income tax. I think it's been proven pretty clearly by the state of the budget that that was the right decision. I would do it again. I'd support a payroll tax. I'd support a flat tax if that had the majority support in the legislature to pass. I mean, I'm sort of very much compromise oriented on revenues where, you know, whatever can attract a broad base of support and get a revenue piece across the line. I don't want to be sort of inflexible or have, you know, some ideological purity test because there's a lot of diversity of opinion in Alaska. I mean, I would definitely say my last preference would be a sales tax. I'm pretty opposed to a sales tax given how, really hurt Southeast where a lot of municipalities rely on sales tax revenue. So you're really hammering those towns with sort of a double whammy. And payroll taxes, income tax are really preferable given the just huge sum of money that leaves Alaska directly every year from non-residents, from Washington, Idaho, Oklahoma, you name it, working in the oil patch, working in the mines, who don't live here, and make huge amounts of money here, and none of it ever really stays in Alaska. So there's a substantial advantage to those revenue measures, and that you, the state of Alaska sees some benefit before that money really leaves the state forever.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Skeffelstead, taxes, income taxes, payroll taxes, these types of taxes, are there any sort of taxes that you would support?
The idea of taxing Alaskans hurts me all over from one end to the other. To reiterate, it is unfortunate to view where we are at. It is more unfortunate to realize why we are there and what strategies might have arrived at this point. However, I am, again, generally opposed to taxes. However, we have to have enough revenue to sustain ourselves. What sustaining ourselves is left to interpretation and a finding of the governing body and the people of Alaska. And I think that taxes as a last resort, if they must be had, I would defer to those that we would be taxing to advise me. And I would in turn advise them of everything that could be found about the options and would listen to them very, very closely about their thoughts. I know this very well, that no Alaskan wants tax of any kind. They also don't want a continued story of how we can't balance our budget, how we can't come out of, you know, with some responsible approach to our fiscal responsibilities. So I'm against taxes, but if they must be had, I will defer to the voters as advisor.
Okay, thank you.
Voted for any tax.
Thank you very much. So I have a follow-up question for Jonathan Chris Tompkins. It has to do, you mentioned that you're very proud to be part of the bipartisan coalition. With the various primary results of the Republican primary, it's looking less and less likely that that same kind of bipartisan coalition will be in power the next session. So what is your strategy, if there isn't a bipartisan coalition, to continue to be effective for your district if you are in a minority with the caucusing with the Democrats?
Yeah, well, I'd love to interrogate the premise of that question.
Sure.
I've had a number of conversations with a number of people in Southeast around the state about, you know, what the future of the House looks like. And I would actually give better than 50-50 odds that the bipartisan coalition will be back in Juneau next year, even with the primary results, which I would, you know, readily, you know, describe as unfortunate for Alaska that, you know, independent-minded legislators weren't able to return to office through the closed primary system. But there's basically five races, the way I see it, all of which are up north, most of which are in Anchorage. And I think there's a pretty good chance that bipartisan coalition aligned, most of them are independents, will enough of them will prevail that the coalition will be back in Juneau next year. Or again, I would put it at better than 50-50 odds. But so just to sort of put that framing out there, but to the question you posed, which, you know, really, really valid, you know, I've been in the minority for the first couple of years in Juneau, and I think it's fair to say no matter who's in the majority and who's in the minority, it's gonna be a very narrow divide in Juneau. And the Republican caucus is really fractured in two between Matsu Valley legislators like David Eastman, and there's several sort of David Eastman aligned legislators who won their primaries. And I can say with confidence, it is going to be very hard for them to govern without the help of a minority. And so I think you'll see a very sort of collaborative and frankly messy legislative session next year, regardless who's in the majority and the minority, and that the minorities votes will actually be quite influential in any scenario.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Scaffolstead, so let's take hypothetical for a minute that the bipartisan coalition is in the House majority next session. Do you see yourself as a coastal Republican caucusing with the bipartisan coalition, or would you see yourself caucusing with the Republican minority in the House? 2 minutes, please.
Out of the gate, I am, as I said earlier, a Republican with conservative views, and am not as big a fan as some of my contemporaries with the bipartisan coalition as a means of going forward. However. And then to backtrack here a minute and clarify, I certainly at first would not look to be joining the bipartisan coalition unless it showed promise for us to bring the wants and the end result to the voters and the constituents and members of the region and the people of Alaska. So I'd be somewhat resistant. I'd be very anxious to hear all points of view from whatever party. I'm not a severe right winger, as it were, but it's certainly a Republican. I will be a Republican no matter what subgroup I join, and the voters can count on me to represent with fairly customary Republican views.
Okay, thank you very much. And we're switching up a little bit and continue with you, Mayor Scaffolstead, and switch to ferries. I was wondering if you've been following the work of the Alaska Marine Highway reshaping work group. They've kind of wound up their work in the last couple of weeks and have forwarded some of their recommendations to the governor. I was curious what you think of some of their draft recommendations, selling or giving away some of the ships that are not being used, reducing service to some ports, and forward funding the Marine Highway, as well as having an empowered executive board. These are some of the ideas that the reshaping group is recommending to the Dunleavy administration. I was wondering what your thoughts were. These are these some of these that you support or don't support, and what's your vision for the Marine Highway? And I apologize, it's a complex question for just 2 minutes.
So I'm optimistic, but given the work of this subgroup, the challenges are nearly as much as the entire state itself when given the task pertaining to the ferry system. I certainly am in support of a forward funding for the ferry service. I have watched for years the ferry service and to all of its ports be a political football that each year becomes a gambit piece on the political table, and I tend to agree for the most part pound for pound with the committee's findings. I think the recommendations are good ones, are well-founded, and to some extent, but the work has just begun. I think they were handed a very difficult job and very little tool chest to work with. And what they came up with is pretty sensible and honest and straight up, and something that I really want to find out and learn more about.
Is there anything in their recommendations that gave you pause? Anything that you specifically were like, no, that's a red line for me?
Again, I'm sorry, repeat.
Oh, I was saying, was there any of the recommendations in there that you said, no, I totally disagree with this. This is a red line for me. I wouldn't support this that you've seen. Any specifics you give us or any?
There were none that rocked my boat to the point where I felt felt in danger. I appreciate the work. I'm certainly an observer of the topic and the issue. Can't say I could have done better myself coming up with recommendations for our valuable ferry system than what that committee did. My compliments to
them. Okay. Thank you very much on that. Representative Christ Tompkins, the Economic Reshaping Group for the Marine Highway System. What did you make of their draft recommendations so far? Reducing the fleet, cutting some of the service, forward funding the Marine Highway System, an empowered executive board that would give the Marine Highway more autonomy from the Department of Transportation. What are your takeaways?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of those recommendations have been previously identified by other bodies, notably Southeast Conference, in terms of having more independent governance for the ferry system. Great that the working group was able to re-identify some of those recommendations. I want to see some action and like, let's get it done already. So, you know, getting the ferry system out from under the political thumb of DOT and the governor, whoever the governor might be at any point in time, makes a ton of sense. I've worked with Representative Stutes of Kodiak for legislation that would create a public corporation, which is, you know, basically a similar variation on the same theme. Forward funding makes a lot of sense. It makes sense for K-12 education. It makes sense for the ferry system. It makes sense for any kind of public service where you want certainty. Kind of the sticking point is I'm not sure there's the sort of political will from the rail belt, notably sort of Republicans in the MATSU, who I think would just as well sort of see the whole thing just slide in the ocean and never come back. The governor's vetoes of the ferry system were, you don't have a ferry system left to reshape if you let those stand, which required, you know, veto override and a lot of 11th hour negotiation and a recall effort to really get them to back down. So, you know, I think broadly the recommendations are in the right direction. A lot of them were re-recommending previous recommendations. I have some hesitancy about the contemplating just cutting Southwest Alaska and the Aleutians off. That's probably my one point of disagreement, such that it's been described. But, you know, good to see the recommendations come forward and, like, let's do something about it.
Okay, thank you very much. I want to pivot to fisheries. And Mayor Skeffelstad, I'm curious of what you think of, would you support confirming Governor Dunleavy's appointees to the Board of Fish? He's reappointed longtime Chair John Jensen of Petersburg, but there's also some newcomers, Abe Williams with ties to the Pebble Project, John Wood, his former Senate aide who's worked with sport fishing in the Mat-2, and also Mackenzie Mitchell, who's a relative unknown from Fairbanks, is primarily a hunting guide and does some sport fishing in the summer as well. I'm wondering if you'd support confirming those nominees. I want to take you first, Mayor Skeffelstad, 2 minutes, and also what your views on the Board of Fish process, the nomination process that the governor is has put forward.
Well, I think that the governor has taken a proactive approach in trying to get a board in there that that can come out with something different and a little bit different anyway than what we've been delivered. And I think Mr. Jensen in Petersburg is a fine representative, sit on the Board of Fish time and time, has proven himself qualified. Certainly to fill a role there, not being familiar individually with the other appointees, I kind of have to say that in that I have great faith in the governor's judgment to put these delegates up for consideration. I don't have a reason and to propose them as yet. It likely will become part of a conversation with my many fishing friends and fishing organizations even further as the new election date. Right now I'm in really well in support of the fisheries nomination. I'm appreciative of what that board does.
So can I just press you a little bit? You say you support these and you said to do something a little bit different. Can you be specific a little bit different how this would cut the business as usual that you might have objected to? Can you give us an example of what you'd like to see different?
Well, I think that I think there's been some repeated points of view from the same voice saying bringing forth the same message for the same reasons is not always the most productive. I'm a fan of changing it up at times. And I think this is a good time to keep some the same and keep some that are changed. And I'm supportive for some fresh ideas, some fresh perspectives. We'll see what this new group might come up with, and we'll see how others react to it. I'm going to have to defer and watch and learn and listen and share.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Christ Tompkins, the Board of Fish nominees put forward this spring. Not sure if they're going to be confirmed. Well, the meeting's been postponed, so that changes the schedule. They have to be reappointed, I think, unless I'm mistaken. But the governor has indicated these, put these names forward. I was considering curious if you would support confirming these nominees, and if so, why or why not? 2 minutes.
Yeah, I have a lot of concern about the new nominees to the Board of Fish. And just to zoom out, I have tremendous concern about the broader direction of the Board of Fish with Governor Dunleavy's appointments. It's basically the Board of Sports Fishing at this point. The balance between sports fish and commercial fishing that has existed since Governor Egan in the 1960s has been completely upended, really, you know, breaking 40 plus years of norm and balance, which was sort of incredibly important for a healthy process that produces fair outcomes. And all governors, Democrat and Republican and Independent, have honored that until this governor. And there is, I would argue, undue influence from Kenai River Sports Fishing Association and sort of South Central sports fishing interests to the detriment of commercial fishing and representation of commercial fishing on the Board of Fishing. You saw that from governor's previous appointments, and I think in some part you're seeing that with this current round of appointments. I was very proud to vote no on the governor's nomination of Carl Johnstone to the Board of Fish, which failed by, I believe it was a 30-29 vote. So every vote was a deciding vote on that confirmation. And, you know, Carl Johnstone, I think, as anybody in Comfish knows, kind of epitomizes the power politics that has sort of permeated from sort of South Central sports fishing interests, which, you know, will sort of shut down commercial fishing in all possible opportunities. And, you know, it's just really important to have balance. We've lost it under this governor, and I'm concerned that this current slate of nominees he's put forward is just taking us farther down that road that upends 40 years of tradition in Alaska.
Thank you very much. So we're just at the top of the hour listening to the House district debate between incumbent Representative Jonathan Kreis Tompkins and challenger Kenny Carl Skaffelstad in Hoonah. Your moderator, Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick in Douglas. We're going to go to some listeners' questions. We've solicited some have come through KFSK, some through KCAW Raven Radio. We'll start with Becky in Petersburg writes, the Cake Access Project is not a done deal. There's still a permit to be decided by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers on a portion of the road project and boat ramp. Do you support a request for Army Corps public hearing to let residents of Petersburg and Cake and other residents on the island voice their concerns and have questions answered on this federal wetlands permit to make the project possible? We'll start with Kenny Skaffelstad in Hoonah.
I absolutely encourage every opportunity for the public sentiment to be forwarded into the process at whatever juncture it is in. Would encourage for a consensus building up in all surrounding communities at towards whatever position one takes towards a project. And so in general, I support a public comment in the Corps of Engineers process.
And a little broader, what's your view of the project? Is this a good use of $40 million by the state to build this access road between Cake and towards Petersburg?
Well, it's been in the works for a long time. The concept, I think, is one that the concept itself, I think, is one that hasn't been worked over enough. More roads in these islands start to open some opportunities. I'm in favor of the project in terms that it's actually get off the ground and there's some measurable progress in the absence of progress on much else. However, I hear from supporters and those that'll talk to me that there's some contention in Cake and in Petersburg about the entire concept of the road. I would encourage those that can to facilitate some sort of consensus finding on the part of the people. Let's not have a project for project's sake, but perhaps to re-champion the initial idea and the value of the project would be a place to go and present that to the people as a basis to get their input forward.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Christ Tompkins, the Cake Access Road Project, do you support a public hearing for the Army Corps of Engineers, and do you more broadly support this use of $40 million of state money? 2 minutes, please.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the ins and outs of the Army Corps process, but my default would be at every juncture there should be, you know, robust and inclusive public input. So I guess the sort of default answer is yes, absolutely. On that front, in terms of process with the federal side of that project. I mean, in terms of the project more broadly, I've always had a more skeptical perspective on the cost benefit of the project, especially thinking about how those dollars could be used. At the same time, the project was appropriated prior to my entry in the legislature, and there's a lot of dominoes that fall it gets very sort of messy with projects that have sort of been appropriated previously and to try to come in after the fact and engage on those. And I mean, I
think, what about going forward? Jeff in Petersburg, for example, asked, would you support funding winter maintenance on the road once it's built?
Yeah, well, and great question. And just to sort of close the loop on the previous thought, I mean, I think I've got a different perspective on this project than my counterpart in the Senate, and sort of I respect that. And there's some issues we disagree on, some issues we agree on, and you know, this is one we've got sort of a different perspectives. But I mean, going forward in terms of winter maintenance, no, I don't think that would sort of rise to the level of the very limited dollars in the operating budget. Putting those dollars towards winter maintenance when we're just going to be trying to squeeze every last dollar out of the budget for the most basic of services, and especially given that this road doesn't actually connect the two communities directly, but just to a boat launch, you know, 15 odd miles from Petersburg, I don't think it rises to the level of using precious dollars in the operating budget.
Okay, thank you very much. And we'll stay with you, Representative Christ Tompkins. We have a question from a listener in Craig on Prince of Wales Island. They write, sometime in the next 12 to 18 months, the Alaska Redistricting Board will adopt proclamation House districts in Alaska based on the 2020 census. What can residents of House District 35 do to mitigate the loss of representation in the Alaska legislature that's likely to occur given the growth of population in the Rail Belt and the static or loss of population in Southeast since the 2010 census? We'll stay with you, Representative Christ Tompkins.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, the population dynamics in the state, if you look at the Department of Labor numbers, are actually pretty interesting. Anchorage also is facing a contraction of representation. So the Mat-Su will pick up probably a full seat in the House, and that will sort of come at the expense to the rest of Alaska. But it will be, given that everything is proportional, it should be kind of a bit more distributed than I think sort of conventional wisdom might suggest. But it is a reality, and it is has been a reality for a while. I mean, I would circle back to the bipartisan coalition in that coastal Alaska, which does not have a majority of the population in the state, is represented in terms of the co-chair of the Finance Committee, the chair of the Fisheries Committee, the Speaker of the House, the majority whip, and the chairs or co-chairs of numerous policy committees, including the committee that I co-chair. And that is, as far as a region, really punching above one's weight. And you know, a big reason why I say and can substantiate it robustly that this coalition is one of the best things going for our part of Alaska in terms of representing our interests on the Board of Fish, in terms of preventing the ferry system from getting just completely decimated by the governor, to funding ADFNG, to rural schools, to you name the issue that's important, public radio for that matter, was supposed to be completely zeroed out. The check on that was the coalition. So, I mean, the fact this very debate is happening in this moment, you know, there's a nexus there to the coalition and the representation of this region. So I think, you know, finding common cause as we have in this coalition is really important for our region getting proper representation in Juneau, and I plan to carry that forward.
Thank you. Kenny Scaffelstead, redistricting could be at the expense of Southeast Alaska after the 2020 census. What would be your strategy to make sure that this region continues to have the strongest political representation in the state legislature?
Well, in the short term, I certainly encourage each community to fulfill all census inquiries and processes to be sure that we're delivering a realistic picture to begin with. I had past experience where it was the information that was officialized but seemed to conflict with the actuality at hand, albeit I'm an old guy and I remember the past some. But first of all, I'd encourage that the communities remain fast to the stability of their individual communities. I think indeed there is a discussion that will be had. I think there is going to be a lot of interest in lessening representation from coastal communities district like ours. And we've got to stand ready and be prepared and be informed and know blow by blow ahead of time what sentiments are within the legislature, within the populace, and how we can influence how the district thing comes out. I think a lot of it's going to have to be, we're going to have to watch and see what some ideas are and how they apply to the required formula.
Well, thank you very much. I want to stay with you, Mr. Scaffelstead, ask you a question about tourism, specifically with cruise ships. Would you support or oppose stricter state regulation and monitoring of cruise ship discharges in Alaska's air and water? And if so, why? And also, do you support the Ocean Rangers program that was taken out by the governor's veto, but is still a law on the books?
Well, I'm in general support of stringent and focused attention to the effect that cruise ships and associated operations might have on our waters and lands in this robust area, in our robust areas. I can't say that I'm in particular support of the Rangers program. I'm not in strong opposition or say dissolve them out of the mix just yet. But I'm not opposed to the state reasonably and responsibly playing a role in assuring a pristine environment. And certainly from the perspective of if we had violations or abuses, would be detrimental to the industry itself, and potential benefit in the future for us. So, while I'm not a real fan of government interjection in this case, I think this industry deserves the attention of the state of Alaska and the people that live in it as to what's produced as a byproduct of those operations. Thank you.
Sorry, Jacob.
Sorry about this.
Oh, no, no problem.
Go ahead.
Oh, same question, I presume.
Yeah, I muted myself. We do that.
Been there. In terms of cruise ship oversight and discharge, opposed to the governor's veto of the Ocean Ranger program, and I mean, just sort of a, you know, note of irony, you know, it's a law on the books, the Ocean Ranger program, and the governor vetoed it out, which is basically the sort of exact argument in reverse he makes about the PFD. So just sort of rank inconsistency there, unfortunately. But I would not contest he has the constitutional authority to do it. It's very clear what can and can't be done, and he did it, and I disagree, but you know, that's that. So while I support funding the Ocean Ranger program, which it should be noted in the budget is actually not coming from the general fund of the operating budget. So these are dollars that are not, say, in competition for ferries or schools or troopers or these other core public services. It's sort of a set aside designated revenue stream that comes from the cruise ship head tax. So there's like literally, you know, no cost and no opportunity cost to funding the program. So that's one of the main reasons why, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to just throw it out, because you basically gain nothing and you lose oversight and scrutiny. We had a number of hearings in my committee on this subject, and I'm absolutely open to, you know, critical looks and reforms to the program. And we were engaged with the Department of Environmental Conservation to that end, and thinking about how it could be more efficiently or effectively restructured. And I think there's upward potential to that end, absolutely. But just to sort of toss it out with kind of no explanation and really no public benefit makes no sense to me, and very much opposed to that action by the governor. Muted again.
Yep, sorry about that. Okay, I'm new at this. Would you oppose or support stricter monitoring or regulation of discharges in air and water than currently exists in state law? Are there any examples of where Alaska could go further than it does now with respect to cruise ships, environmental regulation?
Yeah. I mean, great question. I mean, this really gets into the specifics, and I would have been more on my toes back in March, April, when we were really getting down into the commas and the specific, you know, numbers of, you know, X units per volume of water of this element or that element. My recollection from looking at the specifics of the cruise ship discharge regs is that in some instances there is room, I think, for tighter regulation, and in some instances there isn't. And I mean, it's been more than half a year, so I can't quite remember, you know, is mercury problematic or sort of copper problematic, so on and so forth. But my recollection is that sort of refreshing and taking sort of a critical look at all of that was productive, and that I think there were specific discharge limits that were potentially concerning. But I really sort of hesitate to, you know, come down and sort of stamp one thing as problematic or not, because I just don't remember the details. Muted again.
It's almost like it's doing it automatically. Sorry about that. Since I'm so lax on timekeeping, Mr. Scaffelstead, do you have anything to add on cruise ships, since Representative Christ Tompkins had some extra time?
Well, as well as I think that there's a lot to be gained when we speak of state oversight pertaining to emissions and their effect from a traffic aspect to whatever recognizable impact. And typically we hear them from complainers, basically people that have a problem with whatever the cruise ships are doing. I think they deserve consideration. After all, they're partaking of what they do and where these people live. There's no better environmentalist than the people that live right next to where these cruise ships travel. And I think the state of Alaska, perhaps before anticipating a regulation, which typically are a constriction of sorts, is to pursue direct view and oversight and intelligence gathering on a case-by-case basis to whatever degree that could be found. And by the same token, I think that incentives might be offered up to those cruise ships or companies that served in the exemplary environmental interest of Alaskans at large, where the state might reward of sorts for those that did not approach the limits or did not require or need to push the envelope to the point where we need to watch them all the time. That being said, okay, I'll repeat that I think the state of Alaska deserves to truly have an accurate picture to deliver to the public about the impact of cruise ships in general upon the lands and waters in which we live.
Okay, thank you. Staying with you, Mr. Skeffelstad, climate change. What steps should the state of Alaska take to prepare for a warming climate and also increasing ocean acidification, acidic waters in Southeast Alaska?
Well, I think that the beings of the climate changing is a thing that certainly in Southeast Alaska we're very familiar with. Lore and just sheer ancient knowledge speaks of changes in the climate realized over long periods of time. And I think the best advisors here are those those in the public that know about it, that see it, that are realizing it. And the state of Alaska doesn't have the resources it once had to address this inevitable happening and circumstance. I think the state should be in high awareness, should be in high communication with the people living here to realize the impacts and potentialities and consider forecasts from those that might be qualified to make them. And I think that our waters should be viewed by the state of Alaska as a precious resource that we must guard from abusiveness and destruction by whatever means, natural or artificially inseminated by industrial development. Okay. Part of every conversation that we might have in this state.
Okay, thank you very much. And Representative Christ Tompkins, do you agree that the state of Alaska's resources are too limited to address climate change? Or what's your view on this?
Yeah, I mean, zooming out, climate change, a reality. It's kind of like the budget. There's facts out there that are irreconcilable, and one of them is the parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and the sort of other factual measures of our changing atmosphere and changing climate. So I mean, that's sort of my starting orientation. If this is happening, it's very clear. I think sort of any lingering denials of the reality are going to be looked on very poorly by history decades out from now. So I'm sort of very much aligned towards what is this factual reality and what we can do about it. And, you know, the impacts are coming to Alaska, whether we want them or not, and already have. I mean, there's been various village relocations up north where permafrost is melting. You know, fortunately, Southeast Alaska isn't directly affected by that, but some of our fellow Alaskans up north and out west are. And the state needs to be a part of that solution and mitigating those impacts and supporting those communities in relocation. You know, Governor Walker established a commission on the subject of climate change. I thought that was a really positive step. It actually originated with Governor Palin, kind of a mind twist, way back when. So believe it or not, she got the ball rolling. It was disbanded by this governor, but I would very much support something like that coming back. And, you know, in the biggest picture, you know, I think we need large market-based solutions in terms of pricing carbon. You know, carbon fee and dividend makes a lot of sense to me. That's probably a federal measure, but, you know, the state should have its eyes wide open on this. And also, like, this can be very beneficial to the state. I mean, the carbon deals that Sea Alaska and Gold Belt have inked in terms of monetizing their lands are, you know, extremely lucrative. So there's a lot of upside to an opportunity, I think, in terms of addressing this problem, which, by the way, we absolutely must do.
Thank you. So I want to throw to now Pebble Mine. Then the question here would be, what role does the state of Alaska have with the permitting? Do you agree with the state of Alaska helping to develop the Pebble Mine? What would your strategy be in the legislature if elected? We'll start with Kenny Scaffolstead.
Well, I think that Alaska has a inevitable future, certainly a present situation regarding the mine. The Pebble Mine in particular certainly draws the ire and concern of those concerned with the fisheries industry in that particular region. It is a sensitive area geographically speaking. I think that there is a gigantic opportunity for us to pursue a basic building block for the future of Alaska in this concept. I think that the state of Alaska might take the approach where the concerns of the locals in terms of their fears, their concern about the impact of the mining operation itself upon their way of life, upon their standard, should be taken into consideration. And I don't think that it's as complicated as we make it out to be. A standard might be drawn that if a recognizable impact in any one of the pre-recognized areas towards the fishery or the lifestyle of the people there are realized that the mine has to punt and back up and make it good or go away. That being said, mining potential. I'm generally in support of mining in the mining industry and mining development here. But I think the state needs to really be awake and on its toes in dealing with each and every project, and certainly this one.
So is that, I'm hearing like a cautious endorsement of the Pebble Project then, Mr. Scaffolstead?
I endorse progress on the Pebble Mine, guarding the crucial subsistence and commercial fishery in the Bristol Bay region, and special recognition to those residents that live off the land and in river country. It's a chain effect can be realized from upriver, and those people know best. Here, if they're what they're concerned about and alleviate their concerns or take them on as a state and eliminate them from a potentiality.
Okay.
Coming from the mine.
Thank you. Representative Price Tompkins.
Generally in support of the mine.
Yeah. No Pebble. Straight up opposed to the mine for a number of reasons. As late Senator Stevens said, wrong mine, wrong place. It's a global treasure, the Bristol Bay watershed. It's incredibly productive as a fisheries resource. It's incredibly productive economically for the state of Alaska and that region, and it should be in perpetuity. And I think it's our stewardship responsibility to keep it that way. And when the region is pretty much entirely opposed to the project, and this project to some extent is kind of just getting rammed down their throat by a Canadian mining company, that's a real problem with me. And, I think sort of deference to that region and their opposition to the project is an incredibly relevant fact, not to mention that the project is opposed by a majority of Alaskans. And I think all of this is just amplified and undergirded by the tapes that came out with CEO Collier and the unmitigated arrogance that was expressed by him in those recordings should be troubling to every Alaskan who saw those tapes. Well, I've got 30 seconds left, so I'm just going to close this out. And there's a 2014 ballot initiative that was passed that I think has been kind of lost in perspective, in that the legislature actually has the authority and the responsibility to approve any project in that watershed by, an affirmative resolution. And so I think it's important to keep that in mind, that the legislature is going to be a very relevant entity going forward should this project advance, and I will be no on such a vote.
Thank you very much. And we'll go to closing statements. You've got 1 minute, Representative Price Tompkins. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Jacob, and KFSK, KCOC, KRBD for hosting this, and really appreciate the comments tonight from Mr. Scaffolstead. And I'll just sort of touch on a couple of points that as I mentioned in the opening statement, I think are really important these next 2 years. It's really important for us to make the right long-term generational decisions these next 2 years. And I'm fully committed to that, to not papering over inconvenient realities, but to confronting the math and casting the hard votes and making the decisions that will secure the future for the state. And for me, that means working with a bipartisan coalition and really doubling down on the coastal representation that we have there, and serving as a check on this governor and serving as on a check from the really extreme politics we're seeing out of the Mat-Se Valley. So that's very much my orientation in the next 2 years, and would really appreciate the support of the district to go to Juneau and do that.
Thank you for being here, Representative Curtis Tompkins. Kenny Scaffolstead, 1 minute wrap up, please.
Yeah, I'm here to offer you a change. We have experienced a transition. The state of Alaska finds itself with its proverbial back against the wall in many areas. Nothing can have a greater impact than your vote in this election. If you've already pre-voted on this, consider, and you haven't voted for me, consider changing that and vote for me in this election. And you will offer yourself the greatest opportunity to change from the mines that brought us to this place, where we go from here. And my experience, my knowledge, and my dedication will deliver to you a truthful and open and humble approach to the legislative processes. And where I've troubleshot on many problem areas in our region before. I will produce the Trouble's End once again. You can make a difference. Make yours count. Vote this year. And let's give ourselves a change that we can count on. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And you've been listening to the debate with Democratic Representative Jonathan Kreis Tompkins of Sitka and challenger Kenny Carl Scaffolstead, Republican in Hoonah. Thanks very much. From Douglas, Alaska, I'm Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick.